Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, and I have on the line with me...
Garland Nixon!
Terry Nixon and Garland D. Kester, or something like that. Garland Nixon and Terry D. Kester on the line with me at the same time on a very, very rainy day in Washington, D.C. It's a drizzly day. It's a good day to sit inside and listen to the radio or to drive around. Well, it's not really a good day to drive around. But if you're in your car and you're stuck in the rain, you can listen to us here on the Raucous Caucus. Lots to talk about today, gentlemen. I know, Terry, you want to talk about unemployment. Briefly, what's that about?
I need a job.
You need a job. Okay, well, that, you know, and 7% of other Americans.
Yeah, it's about the Congress and the Republicans and the people haters.
Yeah, and also about the fact that they won't extend unemployment insurance. So we'll get to you a little bit later, Terry. And I want to talk about the big ruling in Utah, which I find huge because I think it's the beginning of the national end to marriage discrimination. It's not just New Mexico and Utah. It's going to go across the nation. But first, we're going to start with you today, Garland, because you want to deal with duck travesty. Wait, that's what it's called, right?
Well, something like that. Good old duck dynasty.
I hear that A&E actually has backed down in the face of pressure and is going to put the racist homophobe right back on air. One hip parade, not even one. No hip parades for A&E. Tell us what your thoughts are, Garland.
Well, a couple things, and that is, I'll be honest, the very first thought that I had when I heard about that, the first thought that entered my mind was, well, it appears that sometimes you can actually judge a book by its cover.
I saw that on Stephen Colbert, I think, said that.
Let me tell you. This guy...
Louise and a backwoodsman with a long beard. Yeah, Phil Robertson.
Yeah, I looked at this guy, and it's funny, but I guess it's not, because let me just say this. I am, should the word be prejudiced or biased towards, biased against the Southern culture, and when I see a good old boy with a beard and, you know, but camouflage gear, and he's from, you know, whatever, you know, Raccoonsville, Louisiana or something, right off the bat, I assume that there's maybe a pretty good chance that this guy may not be the most... reasonable person when it comes to diversity. So when I heard this stuff, people freaked out, and I thought to myself, where's the surprise?
Now, Garland, for the 1% of Americans that don't know what we're talking about, why don't you tell our listeners exactly what Phil Robertson had to say in GQ magazine?
Oh, gosh. Let me get as close as I can. He basically described gay sex and said that he didn't find gay sex attractive. He found heterosexual sex attractive.
But in and of itself, there was a... Go ahead.
You know, and then he mentioned that, well, back in his day in the 50s, and that he was white trash, which, of course, meant that he worked with the blacks because he was down there at the bottom of the social ladder.
Right.
And so he hoed cotton with those lowly blacks down at the lowly bottom of the social ladder. And they were happy to be there. Sure. Did they have rights? Nah. You know, with everything, did they have inferior schools? Certainly. I mean, if they so much as looked at a white person, did they get hung? Absolutely. But as he said, it was before entitlement and before welfare. And darn it, those slap-happy black people, they knew their place. And they were happy about it.
Well, what he said was he never hurt
by saying this.
Yeah,
well, he didn't say anything to shock me based on, you know, considering the source.
Let me just finish what he said, just so people know what we're talking about here. For those who don't know, he said he never heard any complaints from black people. He never heard anyone singing the blues, which is ironic since, as far as I recall, African Americans invented the blues. So, and then he said about, he didn't just say that he didn't like gay sex, which is fine. He doesn't have to. He's a straight guy. But he basically said that homosexuality is akin to bestiality, which reminds me of Rick Santorum. Basically that sex with a man from a man is like sex with a dog, which I guess implies that all gay people are animals, or some such. So those were the two comments he made. He made them in GQ magazine, for those who don't know. And I had never heard of Duck Dynasty prior to this duck travesty. I really never had.
Which brings up a good point.
I mean, I think it was all a public relations tool, frankly. I think they got a lot more people to watch A&E. But go ahead, Terry.
Well, as far as the show and as far as Mr. Robertson, And the far as far as his idiotic comments, you know, who gives a damn?
I don't.
You know, he's
me neither.
Insignificant, another one of multimedia entertainment flood of crap that's on TV. And yes, a small percentage of people watch it. Yes, he's out of place and, you know, doesn't understand. I don't know. He's not uneducated. He went to Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, which is also, which is interesting because...
Yeah, he has a history of alcoholism, et cetera. He is now reformed, supposedly, in all of his evil... He admits that he was just really kind of a mess, you know, for most of his life. And but, you know, who gives a damn? He's just
Here's
not
the thing.
A significant human being, and why give him... All this attention, well, good grief.
I don't think that most Americans are really that into duck hunting. I don't think it's that exciting a thing.
Duck dynasty, yeah.
I mean, you know, I'll eat duck every now and then. Call me brutal or something. But look, this is a show that had its own little determined following. It a lot of people never heard of it. Me, I've given up on reality shows. I don't think I've seen one since Survivor 10 years ago, back when they were interesting. And of course, the dirty little secret about reality shows is they're about as real as the worldwide wrestling. They are scripted. They're real people who basically told what to say by the producers to have drama. And the dirty little secret is of these places is that the reality show producers have always been censoring their people, not so much what they say, but in what's shown up on the edits. We now know, I don't know if you know this, but I found out, and this is another show that I refuse to watch, but Jersey Shore, which is about a bunch of ignorant people in New Jersey rather than ignorant people in Louisiana, apparently they're racists and homophobes on that too, but they just weren't exposed the way this guy was.
Yeah, and the only reason he's exposed because he got in our interview with GQ, you know, which is absurd. Well, I don't know what the hell GQ can't find something interesting to interview or somebody interesting to interview. I mean, it's absurd.
But
I mean, this is an insignificant man, you know, making stupid comments.
And yet it became a huge storm. For everyone from Sarah Palin to you name it on the right took up, including Governor Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, took up his cause is somehow related to free speech and the First Amendment. Garland, do reality show stars have a right to their job? I didn't know that.
No, they don't. And anyone has a right to fire any employee for whatever. You know, there are very few employee rights in any states in this country.
Right.
That's
but
a dirty
there
little
are no
secret.
Employee rights.
But the thing about it is I'm kind of with Terry in a lot of ways where when I heard that, I looked at that guy and I read what he said and I yawned. I just simply, you know, okay, let me, you know, flip the channel and see. You know, a lot of people played this out. Now, the only significance is to me, the only significance that I see out of it is this. And that is for people who are saying, oh, we've come so far and, you know, these southern states such as Louisiana, why they're not passing laws to disenfranchise, you know, minorities from voting. But certainly that's absurd. And these types of attitudes still exist in those places. And this is clearly evidence that those types of attitudes motivate a lot of the things that happen when it comes to voting patterns and when it comes to trying to change trying to disenfranchise various groups. That's the only significance I see in it. Other than that, it's like, you know, it's like watching a guy from, you know, New York and he has an Archie Bunker kind of New York accent or something like that. Yeah, you know.
But here's the thing I found interesting about this. I didn't find interesting that some Louisiana backwoods duck hunter is a racist or a homophobe. Okay, that is supremely uninteresting to me. It's actually quite common. What I did find interesting was the whole hubbub over all of this by people who should know better and should care about other things. This is the part I find. First of all, I think this was all publicity stunt. I truly believe A&E wanted this to come out. Then they could suspend him and then unsuspend him, and that way they could increase their highest rated show. I have no doubt.
You're cynical, but you're probably right.
I mean, I can't prove it, but I would be highly unsurprised if this wasn't a PR stunt. A publicity stunt done to increase their ratings. You know what? I'm still not going to watch the show. Sorry, A&E. But what I found interesting, even the publicity stunt, because let's face it, channels do publicity stunts all the time. What I find fascinating is the huge uproar in America by conservatives saying they had a First Amendment right to present racists and homophobes on national TV as reality show stars. And what strikes me about this is that people get fired. And listen, all three of us are in radio. I think all three of us have done TV. You know, we know that you can't say everything you want on radio or TV. Martin Bashir made a, let's face it, a crass comment about Sarah Palin, who also made an extremely crass comment claiming that the national debt is somehow akin to slavery. And Martin Bashir went one further and talked about an evil slave master. And if he did what he did to his slaves, to Sarah Palin, she might have another point of view. It was a crass comment. Not that Sarah Palin doesn't deserve our criticism, but the way he put it was probably, but he got fired for that. David Schuster actually made a comment about Hillary Clinton pipping out her daughter. He meant it in the way he meant it, which is obviously using her to help her mother's campaign, which I don't think anyone can dispute that Chelsea was used to help her mother's campaign. He used language that was a little extreme, and he got fired. So this idea that you could say whatever you want on reality TV, and apparently if you say racist or homophobic things, that's not as big a deal as using some of these other choice phrases that liberals have used. And Garland, it's your topic. What do you think about the distinction between the left and the right on these things?
Here's what I think. The right wing doesn't really, don't take what they say at face value. Here's the bottom line. They do dog whistle politics. And when someone says something racist, all of the right wingers are going to jump up and defend that person no matter what. Why? Because it's sending a coded message to the right wing racist, southern racists, that we still got your back, we still support you, we're still your brethren, and right, wrong, or indifferent, we're always going to support you. And that's all I think it is. So I don't think, what they say and how they say, well, First Amendment, Tenth Amendment, I don't care what they say, that's irrelevant. I think it's what they're doing that is an issue, and I think it's pretty transparent.
Let me tell you what's really sad about this, guys, what's really sad about this. Good old Phil Robinson now has twice the following he ever had before. He's going to have a bigger platform to stand on. And all because people get all wrapped up around this really relatively insignificant stuff. There are such serious problems in our society. We allow ourselves to be distracted from what is really wrong in this country, which are fundamental problems in this country that we just totally ignore. So we can spend all of our attention worrying about this fool in some insignificant magazine only 20 people read anymore, on a TV show that's insignificant. Now what we've done is we've raised him up on a higher platform so he can be even more of an idiot, and we can get more distracted from what are really the fundamental problems in this country.
But I like what Garland said about code words. I think this is very much about code words. I saw on CNN something that just kind of blew my mind. I saw an Alabama state senator passing a resolution in the state of Alabama that Phil Robertson was a hero, because he was a homophobe and a racist. Well, they asked him, and good for the CNN reporter who asked the Alabama state senator, and I forgot his name, a Republican, some tough questions, and said, well, do you agree with what Phil Robertson said? And he said, well, I wouldn't have compared homosexuality to bestiality, and no, I don't think that blacks in the Jim Crow South were actually happy. But he's a hero for speaking his mind. And I thought, wow, this is a guy who really wants to have it all sorts of ways. He doesn't agree with Phil Robertson's racism and homophobia, so he claims, and yet he's declaring him a hero. And I'm just trying to think of people who say things I find offensive that I call heroes. I can't think of any, actually.
Yeah, it's an oxymoron.
So he's really trying to have it both ways. Go ahead, Garland.
Right. What he was doing was he was clearly lying.
Okay.
I'm sure if someone came on and said, some Republican was, or something about white people or something, Christians or whatever, he wouldn't say, let's make that guy a hero because he's speaking his mind. So clearly it had nothing to do with what he was saying. That was fraudulent. The issue was, and this is what I always say about the right wing or people, period. I don't care what you say. What you say is irrelevant. I don't judge you on it, if I can't judge you, whatever you may want to call it. Evaluate you by what you say. I evaluate you by what you do.
Yeah,
so what you're saying is, I'm not into all what he said, but he's a hero. Well, regardless of what your reasoning you're doing, you're introducing something that says he's a hero, and you didn't introduce it before he made those statements. So the question is, what makes him a hero?
Yeah, I mean,
obviously that what he did to you makes him a hero, or you wouldn't be doing what it is you're doing. I don't care what your excuse is.
Yeah, I don't think he's a hero because he shoots ducks in the Louisiana backwoods. I somehow that's it, and there's a reality show about him. I mean, if
people
is the situation a hero in New Jersey because he has a reality show about him?
Yeah. If you step outside your door and talk to 20 people, you're going to hear some real stupid comments. You know, if you go online, you're flooded with stupid comments. You know, why not just at least say, look, you know, why waste your time looking to Deck Dynasty? Why don't you turn on Bill Moyers just once, you know, so you can maybe learn something? You know, why are people so involved in staying ignorant? It's just amazing. And with current television and current media, 99% of that stuff is absolute garbage. I'm much more concerned about the incredible violence on all of it, the escalating violence. The request by the networks now, ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS, they all want to be able to use every swear word that, you know, was used on cable now. They want the freedom of speech of saying the things that I can't say right now to you on the air because that's going to make them better or something. I mean, it's just...
Well, that actually doesn't bother me.
The lowest common denominator in every single way.
Let me just real quick, before we go off this topic, talk about A&E and its role in this. So if A&E was not doing a publicity stunt, and I contend they were, but if they were not doing a publicity stunt, let me suggest to you that they handle this the worst possible way. So they suspend him, and then they bring him back 2 weeks later before anything's actually shot, so they don't actually harm him in any way. They increase his following among conservatives. And when this first happened, what I suggested that A&E do is actually not suspend him because I think the best way of fighting speech is with speech. I was going to suggest that they bring on the reality show some Louisianan African-American about Phil Robertson's age who lived through Jim Crow to tell him that it was not all hunky-dory, to tell him that they were singing the blues just behind the racist back because they didn't want to get shot or lynched. Bring on the show some gay person, hopefully a friend or a relative of his, someone that he knows, he maybe doesn't realize is gay, telling him how offended and hurt he was, and confront Phil Robertson with his own racism and homophobia, and then on the air make him either say, you know, I was wrong, or I disagree, I think I'm still racist. But if you confront him right there, first of all, that's good TV, A&E. You want to increase your ratings? I'd watch that. I would watch that. That is the way I think to deal. I mean, my own view is never to like shut down Ku Klux Klan rallies, but to have counter rallies to show these white trash for what they are. I think that if A&E had done that or could still do that, if you're listening, A&E, that to me is the way to deal with it. Don't suspend him, confront him, and make him either repeat the horrible things he says, which will make him look worse, or recant them, and I'm fine with that too, even if I don't believe it, because that will affect some people as well. What do you think, Garland, of my idea?
Well, two things. I'll end up with this. Two things. Number one, I don't expect A&E to do the right thing, the moral thing. I expect them to do the thing that's going to make them the most money. That would be the reasonable assumption, which is probably bring them on and get more, you know, right-wing viewers, number one. Number two, let me just say this. Phil Robinson wasn't saying that black, in reality, he wasn't saying it was a projection. He wasn't saying black people were more happy when they lived in abject poverty and oppression. He was actually saying, I was more happy when they were doing that. That's what he was really saying. So he was saying we had a better society when classes were clear and these people knew their place down at the bottom, and I was happier. And they never complained to me like they were going to walk up to a white guy on the street and say, excuse me, sir, I'm very unhappy with the fact that you're a member of the Klan and you're lynching, you and your guys are lynching us. You think you could do so? No. So it was just a projection of saying that was a better society we had when everybody knew their place. And I was poor then, and I knew my place, and I was okay, but I had the opportunity to rise. Because they were black, they don't get the opportunity to rise. They must stay in that at the bottom of the barrel.
You know, the easiest way to stop somebody like Phil Robinson is, frankly, to ignore him. There's nothing better than that, not even arguing. I mean, the fact that now Jesse Jackson is involved because Jesse Jackson hasn't gotten, you know, any attention in 14 years. I mean, you know, it's just equally pathetic. You know,
I would prefer not Jesse Jackson, but some 60, 70-year-old black man in his town or a neighboring town in Louisiana, maybe a guy that does duck hunting too, I don't know, to come in and educate him. And to me, that would be good TV.
You can't educate him.
But that would be good TV, A&E would increase the ratings.
If we keep it up, he's going to be at every Tea Party convention.
You know what? He probably already will be.
On the platform, he'll be nominated for president. Then we have something to worry about, gentlemen.
All right. Well, from that very scary thought, I want to go to some happy news, to what's going on in Utah today. It's really shocking that it's in Utah. Literally, probably the most conservative state in the United States. Now is the 18th state to have marriage equality. They did it against the will of the people of Utah. I want to talk about how that came down right after this. If you want to call in, folks, it's 202-889-9797. There may be a line down. I'm not even sure if you can get in. But if you can get in and you want to call, feel free to do so. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine with Terry DeKester and Garland Nixon right here on the line with me.
What were you building during that interesting commercial?
What was I building?
Yes.
Did you hear noises?
Hammering.
I think that's Garland.
That's Garland. Oh, what are you building, Garland?
What are you building, Garland?
Believe it or not, I was cutting zucchini.
Well, that zucchini apparently put up a tough fight.
I had a couple minutes there between commercials, and I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to grill zucchini, what the heck? I might as well go do it between Duck Dynasty and Marriage Equality.
I think the zucchini was fighting back. Yeah. I think it was acting in self-defense. Clearly, that was quite a battle there.
Way to begin the new year.
So on the Thursday before Christmas, New Mexico became the 17th state to have marriage equality, actually beating out Illinois, which passed marriage equality, was going to be the 17th state in June, but New Mexico got there first. And neither state surprised me, I must say. I've been predicted New Mexico, Illinois, and Hawaii as the next ones up. I said that. And New Mexico and Illinois have happened. In fact, I think Hawaii will happen soon. Okay, none of that surprised me. They're all blue states. Then Friday, about an hour before the clerk's office closed in Utah. It's hard to find a redder state than Utah. I mean, even Texas, North Carolina, a lot of the southern states, due to the past when the Democrats used to support segregation, many of them still had significant Democratic legislatures well into the 1990s. But Utah, and I looked this up, has had a Republican governor, a Republican House, and a Republican Senate every single year for the last 20 years. And probably before then, I just only look back the last 20 years. This is a state that is about 60% Mormon. It's the only state that has Mormons at that level, but it's clearly a majority of the Mormon religion. And this is the Mormon Church, of course, was very famous because they spent millions and millions of dollars to defeat Proposition 8 in California. Yep. Well, now I don't know whether it's karma or nirvana or probably nirvana is the wrong word, but probably karma is the best word, because now not only does California have marriage equality, so does Utah. And it was done because a federal judge looked at the 14th Amendment and said what I have argued for 20 years now, at least, that when the 14th Amendment says you should not deny any person the equal protection under the laws, it means that, guess what? Gay people are people and have the same rights that straight people have.
The really significant thing of this is this will lead, no doubt, to a Supreme Court decision.
That's exactly right.
Not going to give up, and that is going to be very significant. And I think even Scalia will not vote in favor of what Utah wants.
Oh, no, I disagree with you on that.
You will?
Yes. Yeah, I actually think it's going to come down.
He's made a statement, though, hasn't he?
I think it's going to come down to a 5-4 decision in favor of marriage equality, with the four liberals joining with Anthony Kennedy. That's my prediction. It'll take another couple years. But this is a huge deal, because this is the beginning. To me, this is the Loving v. Virginia moment. For those that don't know, the 1967 case of Loving v. Virginia was the first case that required nationwide, it stopped laws from the states that banned interracial marriage. So in 1948, about the majority of states banned interracial marriage. California was the first state to have their state Supreme Court say, hey, under California law, that's a violation of equality and you can't do it. And then there was 19 years as various states got, there was less and less bans on interracial marriage until finally the Supreme Court in 1967 declared it nationwide.
And
this has been.
Puccinelli had won, but, you know, Virginia would be right back where it was in 1938.
Yeah. Well, right. But so this is
to he'd be trying to take that that decision back to court.
Oh, well, he would.
I think he would. And this is actually this to me is the exact same thing. It's a little bit quicker, I think, because the times are quick. It took 19 years then. I predicted it would take 19 years. At this point, I say no, more like 12. I think by 2016, this is going to be nationwide. But I do not think Scalia will support it. I predict, I could be wrong, I predict a 5-4 vote with the four liberals plus Anthony Kennedy, who's really very much a libertarian, and libertarians are okay on gay rights issues, with a scathing dissent, I predict, by Antonin Scalia. What do you predict, Garland?
I'm with you. I say the same way. And, you know, it's kind of funny. But one of the things that this makes me think about is that one of the duties of a government is to ensure fairness, is to ensure a level playing field. And what that means at times is that the government has to make a ruling against the minority, that many, many times a government has to rule against the majority. And that really upsets the majority. And they're going to, you know, you hear people say, well, most Americans want this. Well, that doesn't mean that it's either right or constitutional. When I was with the ACLU and you do polling how people felt about the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights didn't poll very highly.
Yeah.
You know,
true.
People said, oh, no, well, I think the cops should be able to do it, of course, until somebody, you know, served the warrant on them. So it's funny how people always, you know, and so many people, when it comes to issues of fairness, will oppose issues of fairness until such time as that issue visits itself upon them or their family, such as Rob Portman, who everyone cheered because now that his son is gay, all of a sudden he's Mr. Gay Rights. I don't cheer the guy. I say that just shows how much of a hypocrite you are and how self-centered and you know, that these people are.
Yeah, Rob Portman is a Republican, conservative Republican senator from Ohio that came out in support of marriage equality because his son is gay. Just like Dick Cheney, who I would never praise for 100 different reasons, but did come out in favor of marriage equality because his daughter's gay. Now, his other daughter, who's running for senator in Wyoming, got into a fight with her sister because apparently she didn't think Wyoming voters would support her. But the heart of the issue is, you're absolutely right, Garland, the people, when it's in their own family, suddenly they get it. But they can't see it for other people's families for some reason.
I take it back. Scalia will not support it. I just read some of his quotes. The man's still an idiot. I apologize. The man is a moron. An intelligent moron, which makes it really dangerous.
He is dangerous. Now, of
That's
course, we have to remember that majority supported Jim Crow in Alabama, Mississippi. The majority, now the black people didn't like it very much, but the majority, if you just look at the people of Alabama or Mississippi, if you took a poll in Mississippi in 1960, you would find majority support for Jim Crow laws. Now, that's 90% of whites, you know, plus 0% of blacks. And since there are more whites than blacks in Mississippi, the majority supported Jim Crow. It's the exact same kind of thing here. But I guess my question for you, Terry, is as I watched the coverage in Utah, and I saw what is still an extremely conservative, church-going state, and I saw a Mormon couple, a gay Mormon couple, that, you know, two women have been together for 20 years getting married, or the first couple to get married, young gay men. One of them was a descendant of the polygamists, the Mormon polygamists, and said that that his great-great-grandfather would be so proud that, you know. It seems to me, I wonder, with all the happiness and joy and celebration, do you think, Terry, that those who are opposed, and still the majority of Utah is opposed, see this happiness and celebration and they're angry, they're upset, they wish ill? How do you see two people dedicating their lives to each other with extreme happiness and joy and tears running down their face and say, those people deserve unhappiness? How do you get your mind around that?
It is changing, and it's changing very rapidly. The other side of the coin is, I have a number of gay friends who happen to be ex-Mormons or Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very large and active organization. They had their convention this year, as a matter of fact, in Salt Lake City, Utah. And one of the reasons they had it there is because Steve Young, the quarterback, the famous Mormon quarterback, mm-hmm. superb quarterback, and his wife were the keynote speakers. And I happened to listen to those speeches because of these friends, and the friends telling me about it and their attendance to the thing. The whole thing is changing, and the court just really caught up with what is changing in Utah and is changing in the United States. The fact that Steve Young, who is a hero, you know, in Utah, and his wife, who is this one, I can't remember her name, and I'm sorry for that, because she is a wonderful emotional speaker. She is just totally involved in this situation and in supporting the gay and lesbian movement. That is more important in Utah, believe me. That is more important in Utah than what the courts did. That is going to have a huge effect. Steve Young, his wife, that whole movement that is involved in a whole lot of LBJ, whatever the heck the thing is, you know, lesbian, gay movement. You know, that
LGBT.
LGBT, yeah.
Thank you. I was
lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender.
Yeah. That has more significance than this court battle. And the court battle, the court decision, is really supporting something that's already started. And Utah is going to change. And the church will change because it does, in some strange way, actually listen to its members. And
it's actually backing off. The Mormon church is not, they still oppose marriage equality, but they don't dedicate money to defeat the campaigns anymore.
No.
People became very anti-Mormon because they were anti-gay.
Yep.
And I think that the Mormon church is largely backing. They're still not a force for equality, but they're backing off. Listen, they go to pressure. The Mormon church did not allow blacks to be members until 1978. But eventually the pressure got to be too great, and they changed.
I can almost guarantee you that more people in Utah know about Steve Young speaking at the gay convention than know about what happened in the court.
I don't know about that.
Steve Young is more important in Utah than that decision. And I'm not dismissing that decision, but, I mean, it is changing, and there are going to be lots of Mormons that don't like it, and there's going to be lots of Mormons that are going to be angry, but it is changing, and I'm so grateful for that change, particularly because of my friends who have literally been pushed outside of the church, even though they wanted to be part of it, because they were gay.
Well, you know, the other thing is, and, you know, I hate to be the sourpuss kind of guy here, but, you know, I was talking to someone who was in Utah at one point, and they said they went to this compound, which isn't all that unusual, and there were these guys in the compound. There was this little society there where people had, you know, multiple wives.
Right.
And they said they were shocked because while it's illegal, you know, in Utah, they kind of turned their head, so you had these polygamists, and it was this huge compound, and, you know, some of these guys were like 65, and they took two new wives, and the wives were like 15 and 16 years old, and they had like five different wives with five kids with each one, and each of the wives were getting welfare, food stamps, medical assistance, all of the above, because, you know, whatever. So here, you know, the hypocrisy to say it is perfectly legal for us God-fearing people to have a half a dozen wives, but if those two people over there want to get married, well, they're going to hell.
Well, it's not legal. It's not legal in Utah.
It is illegal. No, it's illegal.
It's not legal, don't get me wrong. But, you know, kind of like, what was it all, you know, was it a few good men or whatever? You know, there are different types of rules. And if someone is allowed to do something and the law does not act upon them, and the law, then, in effect, it's legal.
And it's a very extremely small percentage, probably even more significantly. Someday, you know, the courts are going to have to face, which is very interesting, and it may or may not come from the Mormon church. I certainly hope not. But how do you make, you know, bigamy or, you know, multiple marriage, how do you make that illegal, considering the fact that everybody has equal rights?
I don't think you can make it illegal in the sense of cohabitation. People can live with whomever they want. I do think it's fair to say, in terms of benefits, that you get to choose one person to share your benefits with.
Why?
Otherwise, why? Because that's equality under the law.
The 13th Amendment, if four people choose to, you know, be married.
I'll tell you why. Because it's Social Security, all right? You have survivor benefits, all right? If one person dies, you shouldn't get four times the benefits, or 10 times, or 20 times that someone else gets. That's not equality under the law. No, but you would if the polygamy...
No, you wouldn't. You only get a certain percentage, period. you get about 50%.
But each of the wives would have a right to that.
Right. So what I'm saying is that polygamy, you don't, equal protection does not require polygamy to be accepted because it's not equal. It's not everyone gets one spouse. It's some people get multiple spouses. Let me bring up one more thing before we close this topic, though, and that is I've been pretty down on President Obama lately. I think most Americans have. I mean, the rollout of Obamacare was not great. I think his opinion numbers are down, and he's. But I'll tell you this: the judge that made this ruling was appointed by President Obama. The Tenth Circuit judges that denied the stay were appointed by President Obama. For all the liberals or leftists, the people that say, the Democrat Party is the same Republican Party and Romney, Obama makes no difference. Let me tell you something. I've always argued if only the judiciary, if that's the only thing you look at, that is the reason to vote for a Democrat. Now, that doesn't mean you can't vote for a different Democrat. You can't say you prefer Dennis Kucinich over Obama or, for that matter, Hillary Clinton. That's fine. I like Elizabeth Warren, as it happens. But the point is this. When it comes down to the general election, you got to have a Democratic president precisely because of the courts. And I give President Obama credit. He has appointed jurists and judges, and he's got a chance to do that more now with the filibusters ending the Senate, that believe in fairness, that believe in the Constitution. He's having a chance to remake the courts, and that makes an important difference, and this case proves it.
I am not down on President Obama at this point. He's in impossible situations, and I still think he's doing an amazing job considering. Does it meet every standard that I would hope? No. Has he pushed hard enough? No, in lots of areas. Every issue that is now confronting him is far more complex than the media ever pretends, and it is not his fault of what is happening. It simply isn't. He has done more in more bold ways than any president we've had in a long, long, long time. Whether or not he succeeds is another issue, whether it's blocked or whether it's destroyed by its own complexity, or if it's actually a conspiracy or not really a conspiracy, but vested interest making sure, doing their best to make sure that the health care plan fails. And I guarantee you there are companies and insurance companies that want it to fail.
Well, Terry, I'll tell you what. That gives me a good segue to your topic, which is unemployment, because I want to know when we come back whether you think. Oh, yeah, real quick. Go ahead, Gong.
Statement on that, too.
Yeah.
To follow that, I'm not down on Obama. Let me tell you why. On Christmas Day, I helped a family of five. The husband has a college degree. Both the husband and the wife work, but because of, you know, the economy, they can't make very much money. So it's a family of five making like they made like $36,000 last year. And needless to say, couldn't afford health care. We went on the Maryland Exchange website, and guess what happened, Mark? They were all eligible for medical assistance.
Yeah.
So this family of five, the husband has diabetes. They had no health care coverage. So now a family of five that didn't have health care coverage get full health care coverage. They don't have to pay anything for it. The only thing they don't have to pay, there are no co-pays. The only thing they have to pay is like $3 or $1, depending on which prescriptions they have. In fact, the fact is, if this guy's diabetes took him down, the whole family may be on welfare or Social Security or in the street or whatever. So am I mad at, after seeing that happen? No, I'm not mad at President Obama, because he did something really great. And, you know, I guess maybe I'm biased after seeing that, but it really touched me.
It's a beautiful thing. All right. But when we come back, I want to move into Terry's topic of unemployment, because, Terry, I'd like to know if you blame the president for that. You blame the Republicans for that. You blame the corporations for that. What can we do? And do you note that, hey, unemployment is down. It's down to 7%. Does that satisfy you at all? Folks, if you want to call in, 202-889-9797, though I'm not even sure the third line is working right now, frankly. But we'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus right now. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine with
Terry DeCastro
and
Barack Obama.
Garland Nixon busy chopping zucchini.
The zucchini man. We gotta get some zucchini. Yeah,
there we go. Grilled zucchini, buddy. There's nothing like it on the face of this earth. Okay,
I think the zucchini has gone to his head. I think he is a high on zucchini.
legalized zucchini. wait a minute. Never mind. It's already legal.
I keep trying to find a segue from zucchini to unemployment, but I failed. And I'm usually pretty good at those segues.
The heck with a segue.
Maybe we don't have enough people making zucchini.
You can't afford zucchini.
That's true.
Right, let me jump in here, guys.
Please do. Save us.
I don't know about you guys, but years and years ago, back in the 70s, you guys probably weren't even born then,
1870s?
70s. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I had the disprivilege of going on unemployment, or trying to go on unemployment, in Washington, D.C. I happened to live in Washington, D.C. proper at that time. And one, I want to tell you, it's basically a humiliating experience, period. Two, I was in there one day, because you had to go in monthly or weekly or whatever and report what you were doing, you know, the kind of job search you were doing and all that kind of stuff. And I'm standing in line, and there's a young man in front of me, happened to be African-American, but that's insignificant. He's standing in front of me, and he goes up, and he has denied his unemployment. He's denied his unemployment because he's putting himself through college.
Wow.
And he is pleading with them. He is literally saying, how can I better myself if I can't go to school? And, you know, he is in tears, you know, and he is getting this runaround by the people attending to the whole situation that he cannot get it. He doesn't qualify because he's in school full-time or whatever the requirement was at the time. It was so humiliating and so painful, and I felt obviously so powerless and watching this young man just in tears begging for help, that I just walked out of the unemployment. And I said, you know, if I have to steal, I will do more than go on unemployment. It is a humiliating experience in general for most people. And how dare anybody in our government does not, they don't know any of these people individually. They don't know any of these 1.3 million people, hundreds of thousands in California and thousands in other states. They don't know one single situation about these people. They don't know their circumstances. They don't know what's going on in their lives. And they're just saying to all of these people, to 1.3 Americans, they're saying, screw you. We don't care about you, period. It is absolutely stunning to me that this could happen and that every decent politician, if there's five or six left, isn't screaming, how dare you do this? You don't know the circumstances. You have to be vetted to get unemployment. You have to go through all kinds of rigmarole. They check with your previous employer. You can't have been fired for X number of reasons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have to monthly and or weekly in every single state requalify, and to say to these people, screw you, you don't deserve to survive, is unconscionable.
Now, just so we know what people are talking about, what right now they're going to end long-term unemployment benefits for people who have been out of work more than 26 weeks. There is a bill in the Senate by Jack Reed, a Democrat of Rhode Island, and a Republican, actually. It's a senator from Nevada. I think it's Heller is his name, to extend it, but they're not sure they can get the 60 votes to get over a Republican filibuster on it. So,
and imagine if nothing else, you know. Imagine these 1.3 million people. Just think of individuals. Think of some family like Garland was describing. Not only the fact that they're going to get screwed because our government doesn't give a damn, and because these self-righteous bastards in Congress, you know, who have not gone through unemployment probably for the most part, don't know the experience. Just think of the anxiety that has been created to them. Imagine them trying to celebrate the holidays or anything else, knowing, fearing that within a week, they ain't going to have no money.
They'll be evicted in the snow. They can't pay the rent.
No, and also, you got to realize, too, that a minimum of 54% of unemployed people don't have any insurance, either.
No.
So now,
health insurance,
you
right.
don't have employment, you don't have money, you can't pay a premium if you did have insurance, you can't get insurance.
Well, actually, under the Affordable Care Act, as long as they live in one of the blue states, like Maryland, they will get coverage because it won't cost them anything. If you live in one of the red states, then the governors insist that you go without health care at the same time as you go without a home. And they're doing it out of spite because it's all paid for by the federal government. They just want their poor people to be unhappy.
And the other reality is...
Let me give Garland a chance to jump in here, though.
Okay. Yeah,
go ahead, Garland.
Well, I'm with Terry, and I expect... I understand how Republicans think. I understand that the conservatives believe, and they're telling on themselves now, they believe that all poor people are poor because they're lazy and undisciplined, and
yep.
if you give them anything to help them out, you are encouraging that. That's why Rand Paul said unemployment insurance creates more unemployment, because they believe that giving any social program encourages this, quote, bad, undisciplined behavior, which continues on. This is absurd, but that's what they believe. So I expect that out of them. I'm with Terry. What I'm surprised, or maybe unhappy about, is that there aren't more politicians who don't believe that silliness going bananas, screaming and yelling, you know, charging up and down the halls with their hands up and down, you know, that there were, when I heard various politicians say, well, you know, we got together and we struck a deal, I was really aghast that they didn't say, no way, guys, not without unemployment insurance.
Yeah, it's sinful. It really honestly is. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. It's because of an ideological idiocy, you know, whether or not they think it encourages unemployment or encourages laziness or whatever. It's an ideological principle, and what they're doing is taking an ideological point, the same as if I said, oh, you know, I don't know, I believe in and Garland's right to, you know, do whatever he wants to as zucchini, and because of that, Mark, you're going to get punished. Because of my ideology, I'm going to punish you, the individual.
Here's how I look at it, all right? If you go out and you commit mass murder, all right? Well, you might get the death penalty, but it'll probably take 20 years. But let's say you just kill one person. Where do you go? You go to a place where you get a
three hot
square meal, hot. Three hot meals, three times a day.
Three
you get a place to sleep. You get health care when you're sick. And you even, in most prisons, get an education. Now, I'm not against that. I think that we have a certain requirement under the Eighth Amendment, actually, not to put prisoners out in the rain. I don't think we can starve them. I don't think we can deny them basic health care. And I think that giving a prisoner an education is a basic minimum. And I'm not even saying we need to treat prisoners more than those basic minimums. But to say that a person outside who has not committed a crime, who has not committed murder, that person doesn't also get these minimum standards of food, shelter, health care, and education, it cannot be right that in Garland's case, his five-person family making $30,000 or so a year, that the breadwinner and both husband and wife and the three kids all have to commit crimes in order to get health care. That cannot be the situation that Republicans want. It cannot. You should not be better off by committing a crime.
This is so immoral on so many levels. The reality is the unemployment rate is not changing that much. What's happening more and more is that the people on long-time unemployment are no longer counted as part of the labor force.
Well, they've given up looking.
Yeah, in the last few months, or maybe in the last month, some 480,000 people went off of unemployment, you know, for whatever reasons, and are simply not counted as part of the labor force. Therefore, because they're not counted, we can say the unemployment, oh, it's lower. You know, we're making progress. We're not making progress. The other reality, and you guys know this very well, is that the corporations, the CEOs, the 1%, they have made something like 20% every single year profit.
Oh, yeah. Massive.
The last few years. There are tons of money.
Stock market's at record highs.
47 janitors if they wanted to or whatever. They're not spending that money because they don't give a damn either.
If just those janitors had massive hedge funds, they'd be fine because stock market is literally at record highs.
Yeah,
at highest it's ever been.
More cash than they've ever had before. The banks are flourishing. The financial industry is flourishing. The top 1%, even the top 20% is flourishing. But there happens to be a group of people that we can pick on and nobody gives a damn.
So, Garland, is the solution what Joe the Plumber would have mocked as redistribution of wealth? socialism? I mean, is that the problem, that you say those words in America and people look at you like you're a commie, pinko, whatever? I mean, what's the answer, Garland? Garland, Zucchini Man?
He's back with his zucchini, I'll tell you.
Did we lose Zucchini Man?
I accidentally had my mute button. Here's the problem. They're not against the redistribution of wealth. They absolutely weren't. The Bush tax cuts were one of the biggest examples of examples of redistribution.
In the other direction. In the other direction. From Porter Ridge.
Right. They just have a problem with it going down. But it goes down to that twisted ideology that says the other side of it, the rich, says rich people are all rich because they're hardworking and disciplined and they've done the right thing, and they should be rewarded.
Or,
so you continually reward the rich for their good work, and you continually punish the poor for their laziness. And that. So what we know for sure is this. The right-wing conservative ideology has been executed in this country, and these are the results.
And, you know, I mean, I don't know about you guys, and I'm not trying to brag here, it's just a reality, but as a producer of special events, I have had the disprivilege or privilege of working with some of the richest people in the world. I've worked with Ted Turner. I've worked with Roberts in Washington, D.C., that died recently. And, yes, they have some good charities and everything else. These are not the hardest damn working people in the world, you know?
And somehow I think the great-grandchildren of the Waltons, who've done nothing but got lucky enough to be born in that family, and are worth $100 million or so each, or more, billion. I lose track of the Waltons.
Yeah, I mean, they're worth like $120 billion as a family.
As a family. And they did nothing. I mean, Bill Walton did something. Yeah, he may have mistreated his workers. But his children are just lucky enough to be his children. And when I asked Republicans about this, I said, don't you believe in a meritocracy? Don't you believe in the American dream? Don't you believe everyone should have these basic minimums? And then, you know, maybe that 7-year-old girl in the ghetto, she's going to have a cure for cancer one day if we allow her to have the education to become the scientist that she can become. You know, maybe we should help her instead of the great-great-great-grandson of some plantation owner that beat his slaves and made his wealth that way. And what they say is fascinating to me. They say, well, you know, there's always enough charity to help out the poor. Nothing. And I say, have you ever seen poor people? You ever talked to a homeless person? You ever walked in Anacostia, where I'm sitting right now, and seen how people live? What do you mean there's enough charity? And then they say, well, if the government weren't involved, the only reason people don't give to charity is because the government is involved. And, you know, I look and I say, you know, Charles Dickens, there wasn't much charity at that time, but Ebenezer Scrooge still didn't want to give to Tiny Tim. How do we disabuse them of this notion? I mean, it's almost a matter of faith for them rather than one of statistics.
Well, the only way to abuse them of this is to have them unemployed for about 6 months and let them find out what it's like. But, you know, the reality is one of the things that happens here and you know, I'm part of it. Most of us are part of it. Garland's part of it. Yeah, we do charitable things. You know, through my organization and my church, you know, we took food and gifts and everything else to families. And I, frankly, am a little bit humiliated by it, even though I know that the families need it and want it. We go into their home. We bring them a turkey for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And if we're really generous, we bring them a ham for Christmas and some gifts.
Then that means they eat 2 days a year, which is nice.
Yeah. And so then we walk out. And that's it.
And then you feel good about yourself.
You can pat yourself on the back and say, geez, charity is wonderful, and charity will solve all the problems. Now, there's another 63 days of the year where these people are totally ignored and punished for their plight.
Yeah.
It's unconscionable.
Garland, what were you going to say?
What I was going to say is, you know, and let me add this. I've said this many times. What people have to learn is what, in the African-American community, politically, African Americans have known for many years. They found it out the hard way. There are those politically who you can't strike a deal with, who you can't work with, who you must defeat. You couldn't walk up to a Klansman and say, hey, you know, maybe we can work this. Say, no, that isn't the way it works. So I say that to say this. The people that you're talking about, Mark, who are the staunch conservative believers who have this pre-Enlightenment way of thinking and this absurd ideology of give everything to the rich and reward them and hurt them and crush the poor, you're not going to change them, but you do have to reach out to the people who are apathetic in the middle, as Martin Luther King and anyone whoever did, you know, had a successful a social movement knows. You have to reach out to the people who are in the middle, who are kind of ambivalent and apathetic, and change their minds. That's where it is. And as Terry says, and I and you and Don Conyers has talked about, it's about protest. It's about going to the street. It's about bringing that reality home to people on TV every day. And I think, in my opinion, that the social and the economic inequality is the civil rights issue of today.
I agree, Garland, but let me go one step further. It's interesting that you said TV, and I'm glad you did. Because I fear that if you had a massive protest with 100,000 people in the middle of a forest and it wasn't covered on the news, it would be as if it didn't happen. Those protests are happening right now. There are hundreds of protests in Walmart all across the country. There's fast food worker strikes, hundreds of them going on. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people are protesting, and yet the news is mostly on Duck Dynasty. Well, that's what I'm saying. And to me, it's about progressive media, and not just progressive media, but ordinary media. Okay, I don't expect Fox News to cover this, but CNN could cover this. You know, neutral media. And I think part of what we need to do, and if you're listening to our voices, that you need to do is call your local media and say, hey, why aren't you covering these protests? Why aren't you covering these protests of fast food workers, of Walmart workers, of union people trying to get a decent shot in America? Because if we don't cover it, if it doesn't get on TV, it's almost like it didn't happen. I guarantee you there are plenty of Selma, Alabama police forces that brutally treated black people all throughout the South. But Martin Luther King not only did a march, but he got the publicity he needed so that when the brutality was done, it was shown on TV. And it's crucial to get the media focused on this plight.
The best thing that we could do, if we could do it, you know, and maybe we should try to do it, is each one of us and everybody who's listening, try to get some good people together, and there's lots of good people out there, and simply rent a bus or two or ten and take every one of the unemployed that's going to be unemployed Thursday, drive them to Washington, and put them on the White House lawn. I mean, it has to happen that way. It has to happen with protests. The other thing that's key is there are a few good senators. There are a few good congressmen. They need support. That's the other side of the coin that's always ignored.
Yeah, I'd say flood the Capitol because I don't think the president is the one that's opposing this. So instead of the White House, I drive him to the Capitol, but same idea.
They need their support. You need to be writing to the congressman who's doing the good job. You need to write to the senator who's doing the good job to give them some strength, to give them some empowerment, because the noisy fools who are saying screw the poor get most of the publicity. And you've got to support those who aren't part of this game. And the other thing to realize, too, is these jobs are not here.
Yeah.
The jobs that are needed are not available. If you want to go into computer engineering, yes, you can get a job probably anywhere in the country. If you like to be a carpenter and do fine work on carpentry, you can maybe get a job in construction for a little while, but it's temporary. There's no benefits. You're going to work 6 days a week, rain or snow, and you're not going to get any benefits. But if you just want to be a carpenter and a craftsman, you're not going to find a job.
Garland, you're awfully loud. Is your zucchini ready?
It's getting close, guys. It is getting close.
Okay, because we can hear a banging and slapping around and plates and knives.
If it boils down to Garland's zucchini, I'm going to really be hurt.
Well,
I get some zucchini.
Yeah, I think you need to share it with us, Garland. Our time is up, and Garland has been sitting staring at his zucchini, just waiting to eat it. So with that being said, Garland, where can they find you apart from the local zucchini market?
At Garland Nixon on Twitter. Of course, Garland Nixon, GARLANDNIXON on Facebook, first and last name, and garlandn@gmail.com on email.
And Terry?
It's even simpler. It's just Dr. DR of Democracy. It gets to me right away at AOL.com.
Is it at zucchini.com?
At AOL.com. thank you both. This is Mark Levine. You can find me at Mark Levine Talk on Twitter. MarkLevineTalk.com is my website. Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. That's MarkLevineTalk. Please do not confuse me with that horrible right-wing guy that doesn't have an E at the end of his name. Just remember the E is for empathy, which he lacks. Thank you, Garland. Thank you, Terry. Thank you for listening in to the Raucous Caucus. Coming up next is the Inside Scoop. We're going to talk about the NSA ruling and some other things that we haven't talked yet about. So please stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back right after this. ¶¶